Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, and Jill Robbins. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Katie Weaver will have this week's personal technology report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The United States ambassador to the United Nations has warned that the U.S. might withdraw from the U.N. Human Rights Council. Nikki Haley spoke Tuesday at the opening of UNHRC's three-week meeting. She said the council needs to make reforms. If that happens, she said, the U.S. might remain a member.
I am grateful for the opportunity to speak in front of this body on an issue that we believe is very important, respect for human rights. As you know, the United States is looking carefully at this council and our participation in it. We see some areas for significant strengthening.
Haley criticized the council for what she called a double standard on Israel. She noted that the group had never approved a resolution condemning Venezuela for human rights violations. Yet, she said, in March, the council passed five resolutions against Israel. She described those resolutions as biased. Haley said the UNHRC actions against some countries and not others hurt its credibility. She said the group must deal with what she called its chronic anti-Israel bias. The U.S. has long argued that the UNHRC treats reports of rights violations differently in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip than in other places. Even critics of Israeli policies say the country is more closely observed for human rights than other countries. They note that serious and systematic human rights abuses in all other countries, such as North Korea, Syria, Eritrea, Iran, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burundi, are examined under the same item 4 on the agenda. Israel, however, is dealt with alone as item 7. But other experts say that the U.S. can only blame itself for UNHRC operations it does not agree with. They say the U.S. lost its influence in the council after it boycotted the group for 3 years under President George W. Bush. The U.S. rejoined the Human Rights Council in 2009 during President Barack Obama's administration. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayd Raad al-Hussein, opened the council meeting. He called for the end of the occupation of the Palestinian territories. He said the Palestinians deserve freedom, as all peoples do. And he added, the Israelis also deserve freedom. John Fisher is an official with Human Rights Watch in Geneva. He said reform would help the council. In a statement, he said, any steps to improve membership standards would strengthen the Human Rights Council. Jamil Dakwar is the director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Human Rights Program. He criticized the U.S. human rights record, noting its efforts to ban travel to the U.S. from 6 Muslim-majority countries. He also criticized its policies on illegal immigrants. He said the U.S. should deal with its own human rights issues. Haley, the 29th U.S. ambassador to the U.N., also strongly criticized Venezuela at an event later Tuesday. She said the government of President Nicolas Maduro was starving and repressing its citizens. Haley noted the more than 60 anti-government protesters killed in the country since April, along with thousands injured and detained. She said more than 300 civilians have been charged in Venezuelan military courts. I'm Mario Ritter.
American President Donald Trump says he will nominate a former federal prosecutor as head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI. The president made the announcement Wednesday morning on the online news and social networking service Twitter. Trump said his nominee will be Christopher Wray, who once represented the government in court. Trump dismissed FBI Director James Comey last month. The former official is to meet with a committee of the United States Senate Thursday. The committee is investigating Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Christopher Wray led the Justice Department's criminal division from 2003 to 2005 during the presidency of George W. Bush. Wray led investigations into cheating by businesses at a time when Comey was Deputy Attorney General. He also supervised a task force of prosecutors and FBI agents. The group was created to investigate financial wrongdoing at Enron Corporation. The company failed in 2001. Several Enron officials were jailed for their involvement in the case. Wray is now a criminal defense attorney and a partner at the law offices of King and Spalding. He recently represented New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, an ally of Trump, during an investigation of traffic delays at the George Washington Bridge. Christie and his aides were accused of plotting to close parts of roads leading to the bridge for political purposes. Two Christie aides were found guilty of the charges. Prosecutors say the aides took the action to hurt a New Jersey official who refused to support the governor. I'm Phil Dierking.
A 25-year-old American is the first defendant in a criminal case involving leaked government documents since Donald Trump became president. Reality Lee Winner has been charged with removing secret documents from a United States government office. The Justice Department said Winner was arrested last Saturday. It said she was working for a government agency in the state of Georgia. A document provided by an agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, said she admitted to printing secret intelligence reporting and sending it to a news website. The court document said Winner had email contact with a news website, which it did not name. Media organizations reported that officials with knowledge of the case said the secret documents were given to The Intercept. On the same day charges were announced against Winner, The Intercept published a report it said was based on top secret documents from the National Security Agency, or NSA. The report said the documents showed Russian military intelligence tried to attack U.S. voter registration systems before the 2016 elections. The Intercept reported the NSA documents showed that Russian hackers spent months trying to gain access to computers used by local election officials. The effort reportedly involved techniques designed to trick people into unknowingly providing login information that hackers can then use. The website said the first targets were companies that provide local governments with software programs for organizing voter registration records. Later attacks were reportedly aimed at local election officials themselves in the days leading up to the November 8th vote. It is unclear how successful the reported attacks were. The Intercept said an NSA investigation does not draw conclusions about whether the interference had any effect on the election's outcome. The U.S. intelligence community found in a report in January that Russian President Vladimir Putin had ordered an influence campaign to target the U.S. elections. The report said Russia's goal was to undermine trust in the election process. Russia also wanted to harm candidate Hillary Clinton's chances of winning against now President Donald Trump, the report said. Russian officials have repeatedly denied that their country took steps to interfere in the election. But Putin recently said that Russian patriots, with no ties to the government, may have been involved in hacking. The FBI and several congressional committees are currently investigating the issue. The investigations are exploring whether Trump or any of his team may have worked with Russian intelligence officials during the campaign. Trump has dismissed the claims as fake news. He has sought to direct attention on leaks about the issue to the media.
Harvard University says it has canceled offers to admit at least 10 students after it found they exchanged offensive memes on social media. The university's student newspaper, the Harvard Crimson, reported the move on Monday. The Crimson reported that the individuals connected through the Harvard College Class of 2021 Facebook group. It said they traded memes and messages with a private Facebook group, which was set up last December. Those memes included images making fun of sexual abuse, racial minorities, and the deaths of children. For example, one student in the private group called the imagined hanging of a Mexican child Piñata Time, the Crimson noted. Others made jokes about the Holocaust, Germany's systematic killing of Jews, and others during World War II. A Harvard spokeswoman did not comment, saying the university does not discuss the admission of individual students. The university tells accepted students that an offer of admission can be canceled for a number of reasons. They include behavior that brings into question student honesty, maturity, or moral character.
The Harvard Class of 2021 Facebook group had about 100 members. Later, some of them then created the smaller, private Facebook group. They shared the offensive images and messages in this group. In April, Harvard officials sent letters to some of the members, asking them to explain their offensive posts. The students were told the school was reconsidering its offer of admission. The admissions office also said the students should not attend Harvard's freshman visiting event in April, the Crimson reported. About a week later, at least 10 were told their offers were canceled, the newspaper said. Jessica Zhang was a member of the larger Facebook group, Class of 2021. A lot of students were excited about forming group chats with people who shared similar interests, she told The Crimson in an email. She said the group began because someone posted about starting a chat for people who liked memes. Zhang told The Crimson she did not post in the smaller group. Cassandra Luca told the student newspaper that some members of the Class of 2021 group had suggested a group that posts more R-rated memes. Luca will also start taking classes at Harvard later this year. Luca said the founders of the smaller group required students to first post shocking memes to the main group if they wanted to join the smaller group. They were like, "Oh, you have to send a meme to the original group to prove that you could get into the new one," Luca said. Neither Zhang's nor Luca's offers of admission were canceled. A student whose admission was canceled said the office asked the students to share with them all of the memes they sent to their private group. This student spoke under the agreement that reporters would not use their name.
Some students, such as Luca, were unsure how they felt about the university's decision, she told The Crimson. She said that if the students had threatened someone with harm, it would be a reason to cancel their admission offer. But Zhang agrees with the school's decision. She told The Crimson that she respects the school's decision because those actions really spoke about the students' true characters. This is the second year that Harvard officials have dealt with students sharing offensive messages on the internet. Last year, students from the class of 2020 shared racist and sexist jokes in an unofficial Group Me chat. School officials released a statement saying the messages were unacceptable. Harvard is one of the nation's top universities. It accepted only 5.2% of the nearly 40,000 students who applied for the class of 2021. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
This is What's Trending Today. Mandy Harvey is a 29-year-old singer from the American state of Florida. She suffers from connective tissue disorder. She lost most of her ability to hear when she was 18. As a child and during her teenage years, Harvey was a singer, but she stopped singing for a time after she went deaf. But she decided to start singing again after she learned how to feel a song's beat through the wooden floor of a stage or theater. She uses visual aids to make sure her musical instruments are tuned correctly and she is singing in the correct pitch. Harvey is now a professional singer, but until Tuesday night, not many people in the United States had heard of her. That changed when she appeared on the television show America's Got Talent. The show has four judges who watch people perform and decide if they should continue in the competition. Different versions of the Got Talent show are seen around the world. Mandy Harvey appeared on stage with a small instrument, a ukulele. A sign language interpreter stood next to the judges. One of the judges, Simon Cowell, asked Harvey about the condition that caused her to go deaf. Then she got ready to perform. She sang a piece she wrote called Try. Harvey said, "After I lost my hearing, I gave up. But I want to do more with my life than just give up." Cowell said, "Good for you," and clapped his hands loudly.
"And I'll take my place again if I would try.
As she was singing, one camera cut away to capture images of people in the theater. Many were seen crying. At one point, everyone stood up and cheered. By Wednesday afternoon, a video of Harvey's performance had been played 60 million times. Why? Shortly after she finished singing, Cowell smiled and said, "Mandy, I don't think you're going to need a translator for this." And he reached over and hit a button that released golden confetti into the air. That meant Harvey automatically moved on to the final part of the talent competition. Cowell said, "I've done this a long time, and that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen and heard." Thousands of people wrote about the performance on Facebook. Many wrote that Harvey's performance was inspiring, and they will not give up on anything they want to do either. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedell.
If you are in Dubai, you may notice a robot police officer sharing the street with you. Your first thought might be, have I walked into a movie set? The answer is no. That robot is Dubai's newest police officer. The robot has a touchscreen instead of a weapon. The robot will be employed mainly at shopping centers and other places popular with visitors. The robot's face has eyes, but no mouth or nose. It stands 165 centimeters tall and weighs 100 kilograms. If the robot works well, Dubai says 25% of its police force could be robotic by 2030. The robot cop was officially presented at Dubai's Gulf Information and Security Expo and Conference in May. Mohammed Al-Nakib, a telecommunications manager, was surprised when he was met with a "Hi, Mohammed," from the robot cop. Al-Nakib said, "It was creepy, but it is also the future. Then I realized it had read my name tag. This will be a fantastic addition because everything is moving towards doing more with fewer people." The rolling robot reported for duty on the streets of Dubai. The police hope the robots will make life easier for the people of Dubai. Khalid Al-Razouki is Director General of Smart Services at the Dubai Police. He said the robot can help the public all day, every day, and that it won't ask for any sick leave or maternity leave. The robot cannot make arrests, but it can recognize faces and compare them to photographs on a criminal database. It can also sense emotions. People can use the robot's touchscreen to do things like report a crime, pay fines, and report lost or found things. They can also ask how to get somewhere. The robot can salute and shake hands with people. So far, the robot can speak in Arabic and English. It soon will learn other languages, such as Russian, Chinese, French, and Spanish. In addition to having a touchscreen, the robot has a camera that can live stream video to a police command center. Dubai has plans to add other kinds of robots to its police force. Within 2 years, the city plans to deploy a 3-meter-tall robot that can run up to 80 kilometers an hour. The Dubai government says the machine would be the world's largest robot. A human police officer will be able to sit inside and control the robot. It will be able to lift heavy objects. The city also plans to use an egg-shaped robot to supervise parking areas and ticket traffic law violators. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.